赞你的主题大，我为你的而抵挡，地位和干嘛去配，西北的拉米达王，阳阳的北方独中，到永陆地永远界，仰望的兄弟北方，也为了拉比巴提歌颂当时更放松。
As this excellent body of mind, the vision and endowments will be difficult to obtain repeatedly in the future. Right now, it will accomplish the state of unsurpassed amount of object and meaningfully benefit others. Also, it is uncertain when the hateful enemy of this present precious body, the mark of death, will arrive. I and other beings are impermanent, the time of death being uncertain. Since there is no opportunity for happiness wherever one is born in samsara, and since a happy existence was never seen on the left of the path or nirvana. In order for this body of vision wealth to possess meaning, I will end the three non-virtuous poisonous afflictions, develop diligence in virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three noblemen.
Generating vast amounts of relative and absolute bodhicitta for all sentient beings.
Therefore, we will be very diligent
Sutta's teaching, the path of luminously clear Bhakti essence.
May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. Regenerate the supreme mind and partial toward all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in the unsurpassed teachings, the path of luminously clear Bhakti essence.
And spontaneously arising in the full form of Vajrasattva without effort and in whatever form that takes.
Anurakto me bhava, sarva siddhi vidyaya, sarva karma suchane, chitam shriyam kuruham, ahaho bhagavan, sarva tatagata, vendra mame mincha, vendri bhava, maha samya sato, om vendra sato samaya, manu palaya, vendra sato tenu bhati, chodhito me bhava, Sudokayo me bhava, subokayo me bhava, anurakto me bhava, sarva siddhi vikayata, sarva karma suchame, chitam shriyam kuruham, ahaho bhagavan, sarva tathagata, vendra mame mincha vendri bhava, maha soya satoham. Om vendra sato samaya, manu palaya,
And when we perform or enact a mandala offering, for those who are new here to this and who have not practiced, we are offering the most excellent relative and transcendent things, activity, ideas, concepts that we could possibly imagine, and riches to all the source of refuge. And we're also bringing all sentient beings into a pure Buddha realm, a pure Buddha sphere of activity. So everybody's doing this with us. So we're visualizing the most extraordinary mental creation of everything precious.
Radhangame bodhanam. vision and pure awareness, in the palace of unceasing inner radiance, is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate, devoted one of mind, lest us to accomplish the rainbow body. In the Buddha field of one's own vision and pure awareness, in the palace of unceasing inner radiance, is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate with the devoted mind, bless us to accomplish the rainbow body.
Oh, we still have a pink moon. We have a pink moon again out there. It's great. Oh, look at this. What's he behind me? So for those that have questions, wonderful, but I want to reiterate to many of you that we have people in the room here, a mixed bag, so to speak, a wonderful mixed vessel of some people been practicing Mahamudra, Dzogchen, and Vajrayana practices for over 30 years, some maybe even almost 40, and others, including Dzogchen and others, just new, absolutely brand new to this. So I'm very happy about that, but also for those that are new and those that are ancient, you have to have some patience that I'm going to try to teach to everybody in the room things that are appropriate and at different levels. And by the way, the things that are so-called at the beginning are just as important as the things at the end. Believe me. To say the four thoughts that turn the mind from samsara is still as high as it ever gets. So it's a great joy. All of it. No Hinayana, no Mahayana. No Mahayana, no Vajrayana. So all there. So let's look at these questions and see. If you could burn these, please. Not that one. That's no good. Oh man, these are rich and full. These are great. I really enjoy these written questions. Yeah. Okay, here's a question. Can you introduce the hollow body with the Adam? Do you use the body of the Adam and or the seed syllable? When is it in Adam, or are you working with two spheres of light? Can the mantra be used simultaneously with the hollow body? The answer is yes to everything. So the hollow body, when you arise, it's no longer your body. So sometimes, in some practices, by meditating on sensation or meditating on perception or meditating on feelings or meditating on breath, the physical sensation of breath, you get the feeling of hollowness. And hollow, by the way, means empty, vacuous, spacious, open. So actually, by meditating on any sensation long enough, it's likely that after some time of practice, you will have an experience of disappearing. Now, it may not be anything like you expect right now. It may be very subtle. You may not even notice that it's happening. You may have to have a teacher point out and say, excuse me, but what do you think that is? Well, I don't know. Where are you? Well, I don't know. So you'll see that if you get very perceptive and very lucid and concentrated, there's no you referencing a lot in the day. No, there's actually not as much self-referencing as you think there is in the day. Just there, but you have to be very perceptive to see that. So when you arise as the hollow body, it's exactly as been described here, is allow this map to change places with an enlightened Sambhogakaya, body of communicative, blissful, enlightened light that arises out of compassion, out of the primordial wisdom. So there's two ways to practice. Especially in the Nyingma, the Dzogchen tradition, we allow the visualization to happen instantaneously. We want it to happen in a flash. And you say, well, yes, but I don't get it perfect. Don't worry it. It's probably better that you're more relaxed. The other method, which is standardly practiced, especially when people have a lot of time in retreat, is to practice stage by stage, bit by bit, for many months, sometimes even for years, until the visualization is utterly perfect. You're gone. And what there is there's a new map. And the new map is Vajrasattva, Chenrezig, Three Roots, Vajrasattva, Dorje Palmo, Tara, you name it. And what it means is that even your eyebrows are Tara's eyebrows. Everywhere you look is Tara's room and so on. And people do this. Most of you could do it. Some people are not that good at visualization. Some people are very natural at visualization. But you'll see that if you can visualize, let's see a show of hands here. How many people right now can see their bathroom sink at home? Just like that. Boom. Yep. In detail. Moen, it's all Kohler, right? Gold-plated Kohler? Yeah, that's fine. That's easy. Like here at the Dharma Center, they usually install Kohler, right? Is that right, Moni? Gold, solid gold Kohler faucets, I think so. Yeah. So can you do that? How about your pillow right now? Can you see it? Your car? How about the front door of where you enter, either your condo, your apartment, or the house? Can you see it? Okay. Can you step into that room and see it? Just let it be. Just let it be naturally arising. Now do the same thing. Just let yourself be Vajrasattva. And you say, I can't do that. Why not? Why not? Because there's a cognitive resistance. There's actually a lack of familiarity, and there can be a resistance about becoming a different kind of body. But the point is, the body, you will discover whether you do Vipassana practice, whether you do other kinds of insight practices, I guarantee $1,000,000, and I'll collect it, that you will discover that your body is simply a mental map. It's a created map. It doesn't mean something doesn't exist. I'll dispute that, but it doesn't mean something doesn't relatively exist. But it is a creation in your mind. It's so easy to prove. It is the easiest thing in the world to prove because it happens all the time. The misapprehension, just look in the mirror. Take a look at a photograph. Take a look at your foot. Take a look at your nose. None of it's actually, it's a fabrication. So arising in the body of the Adam is not just about self-referencing. It actually puts in the seed for attaining either in this lifetime or at death, the luminous body of the enlightened form of light that has the ability to teach countless sentient beings. If you attain to the form body of Buddhas, then you also have way more extraordinary abilities to teach sentient beings the Dharma, far vaster abilities. So out of compassion, it's worth it. But I can say more on that. So can you introduce the hollow body? Yes. So instead of practicing with your body, you really see whatever color the Adam is. If it's white, Vajrasattva, then you see the skin as white and the body hollow with a white, clear body. That's how you do it. And then you can start putting on the crown, and you can see the, yeah, it's beautiful. You just look down and you can see the bell and the Dorje. If you're not familiar with it, then it's good. Get yourself a nice bell and Dorje and learn to use it like this, and then you become familiar with it, and eventually you can look down and you can see the minute details in your mind's eye of the Dorje. Eventually the Dorje becomes a profound meditation, just like the bell. Okay? Any questions about that? So the preference is let it happen, and don't worry it. Just let it happen. Can't do that, then build it up stage by stage, from the bottom up, from the top down, doesn't really matter. Okay? And one beautiful way to do that, I found, I'm going to give some suggestions on Yidam Yoga, is one fantastic way, which is very classic, but not, I don't know many people who've tried or used it, but it's fantastic, is put the image and reflect it into a mirror. Now, this is real completion stage practice called illusory body yoga, found in the six dharmas of Naropa, and it's profound. Take the picture. This is a protector that we use for empowerments. But anyways, doesn't matter. Let's say this is Vajrasattva. Actually, if you could, Travis, you could bring the Vajrasattva picture. Either one is fine. Yeah, the one off the metal torma. Okay, so take the picture, and actually take a mirror. So the picture is reflected in a mirror. So you're not looking at it like this. You're actually seeing it in a mirror. That's the real classic way of practicing. So you're practicing one of the 12 examples of illusion. So you're practicing Vipassana support. So you're not staring, trying to get a thing happening. You're actually immediately working with an illusory body, with the impure illusory body, which you have already, but now you're working with the impure, enlightened illusory body, which is actually hidden in your map. So most of you won't trust that. I don't know what percentage. Until you experience it, you won't trust it. But actually, that body is hidden in your mind stream. It's actually in there. If it comes out, when it says in the text, you know, one day, if you practice, you will see Guru Rinpoche, you'll see Vajrasattva face to face. That means it will pop out at you suddenly. And you will know. You'll never have to tell the teacher, did I see Vajrasattva? Did I experience Vajrasattva? No. You will come face to face with Vajrasattva in a shocking manner because you've never seen anything like it before. That comes out of you. Comes out of your, out of the mind movement of Buddha nature. That's where they come from. Especially when you purify the channels, they can suddenly come arise. You might have Vajrasattva right here, just like that. Or suddenly, the whole body is the Adam, and there's not any doubt about it. So practicing with the mirror is really profound. Practicing with a mirror anyways is really profound because we're not looking for a solid body, we're looking for the nature of the illusory body, which is how all forms appear in the mind. Are you hearing that? Let's try it again. All experience, no matter what it is, appears in the mind like an image in a mirror or the moon reflected water. It's extremely similar. There's no such thing as a solid entity appearing in the mind. Can you take a look? Can you see that? Right now. And when your eyes are open, are you seeing something out there, or is the entity that you think you're seeing, the appearance, in your mind? Which one is it? So this will have to dawn. And the reason we want this is because it's called enlightenment. The experience of appearance emptiness fully is the enlightened body called nirmanakaya. You realize that no single form has any substantial nature. On a conventional basis, all experience is mind-created. And that's mainstream neurological science today. There's not any dispute about that. It's in all kinds of magazines. It's in science magazines, popular magazines now. It's all kinds of, I just read one the other day. I saw, which is, oh wow, you know, Buddhists and neurobiologists are talking the same language. Like, you know, it's a big surprise. That all experience is made up in the mind. How about this? Where's the sound happening? Where does it, let's say you show hands, does it feel like the sound is happening out there? Like where you see this, yes? Okay, close your eyes. Close your eyes. Where is the sound located?
Inside me.
Inside me. Where's the me? Where is all perception happening? Out there? In the sensory organ? Is it all happening in your eyeball? Is it all happening in your ears? Where is it actually happening? Where is the only place that experience can happen? In your mind. Straightforward. And is that a solid thing? So let's try this now. Is this bell in your brain? If it somehow got into you and it's in your mind, would you say the bell is in your brain? It's been reproduced in your brain? No, silly, isn't it? So what is it that's the experience? Go on, what is it? What is the experience? Name it. Tell me what it is. You sound very quiet. Is that because you can't?
A projection.
Yeah. What does it feel like? Try it again now. If you can't describe it, it's possibly because you can't describe it because it's not a thing. If it isn't a thing, what is it? You'll say, oh, but it's a concept. So it's not a real thing, is it? Is a concept solid? Let's see a show of hands. Number one, concept is solid. It's a thing that you can locate, isolate, and put in a box or show people. A concept. Don't see a show of hands. A concept is not a thing. Concept is a What is it? It's a name. What's a name? Can how many people in the room, let's do a survey. How many people in the room could have only one name? Be comfortable with one name. Identified by one name. Let's see a show of hands. One name only. just happy. You're in other words, if you hear two names, you're not pleased. Just one name. That's it. Yeah, I thought so. Please, guys.
Okay.
One name.
Right?
Steve, please. Steve.
That's what somebody called me.
I know. Steve Jobs. Yeah, I know. Actually looks like Steve. Actually, I know a Steve in California who looks like him. Same hair. And wears black T-shirt.
Change my name to Steve.
Yeah, Steve. Okay. How many people could handle two names? Two different names and be okay with that? Perfectly fine. You'd respond to two different names. Everybody in the room? No? Just Steve and Jack there.
My name isn't Jack.
Three names. Do I hear three names? How many people can handle three names? Four names? Five names? Six names? Why couldn't you handle the experience of two bodies, three bodies, four bodies, five bodies, six bodies? Why just cling to one body? This is not an intellectual game. This is absolutely the most vital thing for Dharma. Appearance emptiness is a great realization. To know that all forms and experience are actually like clouds or like bubbles or like images in a mirror. They have no substantial nature. Is absolute suffering. Is abject suffering. It hurts like hell. Because you're always treating things that actually come and go, not just transient, have no substantial nature, as real entities. Do you use the body of the Adam and or the seed syllables? Oh, I do. I do indeed. Is that a personal question? Yes. That's true. Now, the body of the Adam is what? What is the body of the Adam? Well, let's try your body. Can you feel your body? How do you know you have a body? Here, can anybody tell me how right now how they know they have a body? It's kind of like on the spot Vipassana.
Sensations.
Wonderful. What are sensations?
Concept.
Can you feel a sensation? Therefore, there's some sort of vibration or some sort of movement.
Yes.
Therefore, you have seed syllables. The whole body's alive with seed syllables. The whole body's alive with sound. The whole body's alive with vibration. What kind of vibration? So let's try this. If you say the word, joy. Let's try it all together. I know you're having mass on, but try it. Joy.
Joy.
Is that a positive, good feeling in the body? Joy.
Joy.
Joy Jacobson. Joy. Is that a nice feeling in the body?
Yes.
Okay. That Fred. Try that, eh? That Fred.
That Fred.
Pleasant or unpleasant, is it? Okay, so those are vibrations. Those are collections of seed syllables, and some of them will be leading to joy, and some of them will be leading to unpleasant mental fabrication and feeling in the body. And so the seed syllables are sounds that are primordial sounds. And if we use those seed syllables, then they lead to a more awake mind. They also represent, they can be seen in meditation, they'll arise in meditation, and when they arise very, very clearly, we're getting very close to our innate nature, the vibration that's coming out of enlightened mind. So yes, we use the body, we use the seed syllables, which is the enlightened speech, and we use so we have body, which is yadam, seed syllable, which is enlightened speech, and we have mind. We have mind, which is the nature, if you wish, of the yadam, is the commitment to full liberation for all sentient beings. The mind completely endowed with bodhicitta for every sentient being. All right. body, speech, and mind. So, for instance, when an empowerment is given, today the atormo is given, which is typical of Dzogchen, but sometimes in other traditions and other empowerments, the vase is given as the initiation for appearance emptiness. And that's because we're introducing beings to the vase-like nature of our being, like a container, like a hollow container that can contain everything. So the ability to be flexible, so listen to it very carefully, the ability to be flexible in your form, the ability to be flexible in your speech and your sound, the ability to be flexible in your cognition and the way you experience through mind is utterly essential. Almost all of Buddha Dharma is to get that flexibility going, is to stretch it so it's loose, it's flexible, and then eventually it's love-filled, it's compassion-filled, and eventually it's clear-seeing, it's beatific, and it sees the natural empty nature of phenomena. So that's where it's going. Let me know if that's understood. It's a very important point of Vajrayana. Enlightened body, through visualizing a different body, which is enlightened body, you move towards enlightened body. Okay? If you start to change your speech and use wholesome and enlightened speech, you move towards enlightened speech, Vajra speech. And the same thing, the mind, if you have visualizations and experience of emptiness, your move and compassion, you're moving to the mind of the Adam, the mind of the Guru, the mind of the Dakini, which is enlightened mind. And these are the three key points. All Vajrayana practice is about those three key points. That's what we're doing all the time. We're stretching until we start to pull out the olive oil, the pure olive oil of enlightened mind, enlightened speech, and enlightened body. It's just straightforward. All initiations are to do that. All reading transmissions are to do that. Right. When is it in Yidam, in Yab Yom, are you working with two spheres of light? When it is in Yab Yom is when the text says it's in Yab Yom. Actually, we're always in Yab Yom. We're not ever separated from Yab Yom, from the unity of wisdom and compassion. Yab Yom are the two figures that represent the unity of skill and means, compassion and wisdom, inseparable. So even if there is a single being in the visualization like Vajrasattva, the innermost essence of Vajrasattva is Yab Yom, as symbolized by this figure of Guru Rinpoche Nyesha Shogo. Is there any time, not you, but is there any time that your mind is not in union? Is there any time that your experience is not in a unitive place? Not you. Not you having subject-object duality, saying me, you, them, they. Is there any time where the experience body, your physical body, your speech body, is not in union fully with everything else? Tell me. Are you ever not in union? Always in union. Always. Absolutely inseparable. So practicing in the form of Guru Rinpoche Yeshe Shogo, right, which for some may seem a little strange that you are visualizing yourself in a deep blue body, and there's a lady sitting in your lap who's naked, all of a sudden. Well, for some that's a very strange thing, but maybe it's not so strange. Maybe we're actually always in Yab Yom form, we're just not recognizing. We're always at the innermost level, inseparable with wisdom and compassion. So that's actually what it means. Even if the dualistic mind doesn't get it, in here, it gets it. So sometimes I say, if I just speak Dharma, I don't mind, because actually I know that your wisdom mind's getting it, even if the dualistic mind doesn't get it. It's fine. It's gonna work. Somebody's hearing it.
Well,
mm-hmm.
That would go back to the Abhidhamma of points about vocal and body intimation. Is that right?
Well, you've brought up, not really, but you've brought up a good point. Okay? Great point. And this is to do with what I was explaining about karma yesterday. Is the entire force of Vajrayana practice, Dzogchen Mahamudra practice, is not just moving to good karma. There's lots of beings that develop good karma. They're really altruistic. They're really fine, lovely beings, right? Have you met some? Yeah. Have you all met some really fine, lovely beings? They're really lovely. Yeah. Even if they can't meditate, they're lovely. If they can't concentrate, they're just lovely, sterling beings. You'd love to hang out with them. Just great. So a being who has really excellent karmic formations is a very wholesome being. You like spending time with them until they step on your toe or they get mad at you or something like that. But you enjoy them. They can be a good philanthropist. They may be, you know, a wonderful artist, a wonderful chef, who knows? But they're a wonderful being, yes? Like the whole room here of beings. But Vajrayana is saying you need that, which is Hinayana Mahayana, but all the force of the actions, the body and speech intimation, is moving towards Buddha activity. It's called Buddha karma. You see? So not only are you ripening beings who are good, ethical, wholesome, capable, concentrated beings, lucid beings, but you're moving them through the practices like Padmasattva, like Vajrasattva, like Chenrezig, and these generation completion stage practices towards the full range of Buddha activity called Trinli. Yeah, in Tibetan, Trinli. And Trinli is the expression of the five primordial wisdoms and the four Buddha activities. Do you see? So that's the body intimation as karmic patterning. And by imprinting the karmic patterning towards Buddha karma, then you end up with Buddha karma. If you build a pagoda with a sloppy mind, what kind of pagoda do you get? A sloppy pagoda. If you cook a meal and you have a sloppy mind, what kind of meal do you get? Are you following? Delicious meal. No, I'm just kidding. If your mind is wandering all over the place, you're reading a book, what are you getting out of the book? Does this make sense? So in the same way, the practice of Vajrayana is both causal and is highly causal by placing in the seeds and practicing with the seeds of the causality for Buddhahood to arise. There we go. Now, working with two spheres of light, do you mean whoever asked that question? I won't find out who. Whoever did that. Oh, two spheres of light. Do you mean like two spheres of light or two spheres of light or two spheres of light? Okay. Are you working with two spheres of light? Yes and no. There may be imagined to be two beings if you're in Yab-Yum form, but actually there's only one nature. How's that? Two beings, one nature. Travis, props.
Which one?
If you could bring two, if you can bring over and show everybody two candles. Aha. I like these questions, they're good. Okay, Travis, I want you to show everybody two candles. Are there two lights or one light? Two lights, yes? Would you say there's two lights? No, there's only one light. There's only one light of the mind. There's two lights that are two apparent lights. No, there's no such thing as two lights. Two lights don't actually exist. There's only one light of the mind. That's all that's happening. The two lights are conventional. There's a concept of two lights. So even if you have two bodies, and one is sitting in your lap, or you're sitting in someone else's lap, there's actually only one light of the mind. There's one wisdom body. There's one Buddha nature. So there's two, and there's one. Why wouldn't we meditate just with one single form, one yidam, one Buddha body form, and get rid of the two? Isn't that dualistic? Why would we have two? It's complicated. Because there's two, but there's one. There's always two and one, conventional and ultimate. There's no such thing as dualism, and yet dualism is everywhere. So if you can't work with dualism, you have a problem. If you can only reside in non-clinging awareness of non-duality, then how do you communicate all of life? You see? So have you noticed there's males and females? How many people have noticed males and females? Are they different? Who would say they're different? See, I like that. Yes. Absolutely. They're completely different. No.
Yes. This is a technical question, but you're talking about the difference between one and two, so the difference between duality and non-duality. Non-duality being the absolute truth.
There's not even a shred. We need to,
That's a duality.
We need to shred that. Oh, that was a question I was going to answer. We need to shred that. This is Dzogchen. There's no non-duality and there's no duality. They don't actually exist. They never, ever existed.
Okay, so what I meant was there's mind's light and there's the appearance of differences in forms.
No, mm-hmm. None.
Those are just concepts.
And yet they appear. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that was the question.
Yeah. So what's the question? Good, very good. So the yab-yum is to bring us to the non-duality and the duality at the same time. Samsara and nirvana exist at the same time, and they don't actually exist. Samsara and nirvana are concepts, and yet, on a conventional level, they can be identified. Therefore, really from the Dzogchen point of view, there's not a non-duality or a duality. They don't really exist. Okay, more on that later, because there's going to be some extraordinary, not so much from this being, of course, but there will be some extraordinary teachings on this point. Can the mantra be used simultaneously with the hollow body? Oh yes, absolutely. So first of all, work with the hollow body, the form body, then we bring in enlightened sound, and we have enlightened mind. The attitude that you're carrying, the intent, is the enlightened mind. The speech that you're using internally, which will come out externally, is your enlightened speech or your non-enlightened speech. Follow? So yes, whenever we arise as the Adam, we should be arising as a hollow body. Therefore, we have enlightened speech, which is mantra. Right? Now, some might say, if I use the word teacup, is that mantra? How many in the room would say that teacup is a mantra? How would teacup be a mantra? Two guys with long hair. Which one? I think Steve first.
Last time.
My response would be that it would depend on the meaning behind that word.
The intent?
The intention.
Exactly. Exactly. So if an awakened being is saying teacup, then it's liberating mantra. However, more obvious would be mantras or sounds and words that actually directly point, instead of being obscure, like teacup, directly point to Buddha nature, like saying Varochana, or saying Padmasambhava, or saying Samantabhadra, or saying Vajragini. Much more compassionate to do that than teacup. However, if you're with an awakened being and they say, could you please pick up the teacup, and you go, then there's, that is the awareness mantra. Yeah. Got that? Yeah.
But you also, because of that all sounds are enlightened speech, they're empty and they have no real reality. So the sound of teacup is no different in the sense than a mantra sound.
If you can realize that. But if you start from that premise, then you'll never purify your speech. So yes, totally agree. But if you introduce that from the beginning, it's very dangerous, because then people don't purify their speech.
But that's the only reason that I answered.
It's the only reason. Yeah. Absolutely. There's not a single sound that isn't enlightened sound. There's not a single form. All of you beings are actually enlightened beings, enlightened form beings. There's not one being in the room who isn't the form of enlightened being, isn't a Dakini or a Dak. But to start there can be a very dangerous road to go, because there'll be no purification. Or if you introduce a view of Dzogchen, then a person says, I know people who've done that, by the way, they're like that. Then I'm already enlightened, I don't need to do anything. I'm already enlightened. Why should I do anything?
About that, you still need to purify. Even though things are ultimately beyond that, it's the display that's going to give you the problems, because the display is still cause and effect.
That's right. And we're cause and effect beings.
All phenomena that we're experiencing are cause and effect. So if even though you may think that you're liberated, if your behavior is causal, it can have dangerous effects. And the more powerful the being, the more dangerous it is.
That's right. And if you're a compassionate being, why would you engage in activities that degrade or go against liberation, when all the activities, just think about the fearlessness required, the heroic quality, that everything that you would ever manifest would be for the liberation of other beings because they're suffering. That's Vajrasattva, that's the Yidam. The Yidam is a commitment to manifest body, speech, and mind with utter fearlessness in a continuum of liberative activity, trinly, for all beings. That takes incredible love, incredible compassion, but actually an incredible lack of fear. So at the same time we introduce the nature, Buddha nature, we still have to purify, because we're full of habit patterns from the very no beginning, even though it's pervasive Buddhahood. Isn't that beautiful? It's quite straightforward. Wouldn't it be just lovely for someone to wave a magic wand and you realize it all? Well, that sometimes actually happens. Empowerments, teachings, and you go, got it. But then when you go to talk to someone, you realize, I don't. Or when you walk out and then during the wonk, or you step on someone's foot and you break their foot, and but you know you're enlightened, but you've just broken their foot. You know? So what's wrong with that picture? It's because the display manifestation actually takes quite a bit to bring that out, yeah, to purify. So as Antrim Pache has said many times, up until full Buddhahood, we're going to be purifying. Get used to it. Don't see it as a bad thing. See it as an absolutely beautiful thing to be purifying all the time. Just glorious. Don't say, oh, I'm still purifying. No. It makes sense. We'll always be purifying until full, complete liberation. So what? Great. What a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing to do. Yeah. So, let that mantra resound in the hollow body. Let that mantra resound, the Sanskrit or the Tibetanized Sanskrit mantra. Let it resound in the room you're in. Let it grow and see if it can permeate not just your body, but other beings. But then at the same time, when we're in retreat, we don't stand in front of people's rooms, right? And go, Omani Pe Me Hong. Omani Pe Me Hong. And we don't say mantras in our rooms so loud that we know it's broadcasting, because our mantra yoga is so good. Right? You know, we're trying to break down the hermitage or something. No. Keep a lid on it. Okay. So, on a neurophysiological level, okay, this is straightforward physiology. What you think about internally is activating neurons and neurochemicals that are flooding your brain and flooding your body. The tiglis. So it's not innocent. If you change the course of your internal sound, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is you can say internally, then instead of repeating old stories and habit patterns and ways of internal communication that actually don't lead to liberation, by saying mantras, by putting your being in a new map of enlightened being, and taking on the conduct of a bodhisattva, by studying what a bodhisattva or a Buddha would do, you change your body, your speech, and your mind to enlightened activity. So that's really straightforward. Therefore, I keep saying, don't tangle with your stories. It's not worth it. Just because the stories are going to be more stories, but if you just have enlightened stories. Okay. Yes?
Does science have a name for the tiglis?
No, you can say hormonal secretions and things, but those are kinds of guesses. It depends on how you experience it. Like, some people experience tiglis as light, but others experience tiglis as both light and as physical sensation running through their being. So is it physiologically? Obvious, if you have a sensation, it's physiological. Whenever you have a sensation, it's physiological. Yeah. I mean, it's for sure that any thought, even at a minor level, any thought, if you just say teacup, is activating not millions, hundreds of millions of neurons secreting chemicals and actually running through your entire being. And I think some of you know who've meditated very deeply. Yeah? I think you do. I hope you do. That in very deep meditation, a single thought, you can feel permeating your entire being. It's like that. Boom. Just a thought. And eventually you start to feel that every thought, this is an insight stage, which should almost lead you to an utter stage of fright, is that every single thought, no matter how minor, is actually karmic. It's actually samsara producing. So then you think, well, if I shut up, then everything's fine. No, that turns out not to be the case. See, it's a beautiful equation. If I just shut up and I have no thoughts, then everything's fine, right? No, you're just good at having no thoughts. But actually you have a big thought. What's the big thought?
Liberation.
No, if you have no thoughts and you think everything's fine, what's the hidden thought?
Everything's fine.
If I, listen to this, if I don't speak, I can't get harmed or nobody can harm me.
So,
really? So why wouldn't you speak? What's wrong with thought? What's wrong with thinking? What's wrong with thought? What's wrong with speech? What's wrong with talking in retreat? Nothing. You know, it's much harder to have a retreat where you speak with enlightened sound than it is to be silent. I used to hold retreats in Roslyn, British Columbia, and the rule around the table for the retreatants was they had to speak, but they could only speak intelligent, awake speech. They found that really hard to do. They couldn't be silent. Because silence can become a defense mechanism. If I'm silent, then I can't be harmed and nobody can harm me. But if you're not silent long enough, you can't actually hear your being. And you can't hear other beings. So there's a good reason for being silent. I lived with a teacher for quite some time. Well, we're never allowed to be silent. Guaranteed. Not at all. But we retreat, silence. Okay. More on that later. There's a lot to that one. Okay, let's look at some other ones. Oh, the one I ripped up. A few questions. My God, it's like a book. It says Vajrasattva. Okay. For the second visualization, recite the short mantra. For the second visualization in the short text, no, the full text of Vajrasattva, yes, we recite the short mantra. We start with the long mantra, and then we move to a supplementary text, supplementary practice, which is the Skull Garland Lord, and we use the short mantra. That's correct. Is everybody clear on that? Everybody following? Yeah, on the Vajrasattva, thicker Vajrasattva text was the first reading transmission. There's a second meditation of the Skull Garland Lord in the heart. We then use the six syllable mantra of Vajrasattva, yes. Padmasattva, do we make offerings and praises while visualizing the deities, visualizing Yidams? Yes, what we do, when we do the offering and praises, we don't just visualize necessarily Vajrasattva, we visualize a whole host. We try to feel enlightened entity-ness, if there is such a thing. No, there isn't, but it's okay. Enlightened beings filling all of space in the 10 directions, above, below, in every direction, and filling space, and we're making offerings to that. But if you read the text carefully, most of the texts, practice texts, have them then doing offerings to you. Why? Why do we do offerings and we receive the offerings back? Because we're already an awakened being when we practice. We're practicing in Vajrayana, we practice as a fully awakened being. We're trying to be awakened beings right from the very beginning, instead of waiting an eon or two, or waiting 10 billion years, we are right now awakened beings. That is the third turning of the wheel of the Dharma. We're already awakened beings. Let's practice like awakened beings. Does that make sense? It's really, really straightforward. You have to keep remembering that view when you're practicing. Otherwise, you slip into Hinayana. I'm going to be Vajrasattva so I feel better today. I'm going to be Vajrayogini so I have more energy and I'll feel better. No, actually, I will be Vajrayogini because I'm already Vajrayogini and I'm going to embody Vajrayogini. Make sense? Imagine going to work. Let me guess. Let's just make this up. Let's say you're a health practitioner. And every time you go to work, The statement that's going on internally that you're not sharing with people is, I'm not really a health practitioner. But I'm going to the office and I'm going to heal people today, right? Whether it's therapy or Chinese medicine or it's a doctor or a nurse or whatever it is. I'm going to the office, but I'm not really a health practitioner. I'm not really up to it. Do you see what I mean? In other words, I'm going to be someday, and someday I'll get my act together and I'll be up to it. Right? What would that dialogue be like? No, you go to the office, I am a health practitioner, I am capable of helping beings in a way that is highly capable. Is that correct? Therefore, in the same way in practicing sadhana, right from the very beginning, this is my nature, and I'm going to practice as a high-level bodhisattva or as a fully awakened being. Therefore, we shorten down the process. Is that straightforward? It's really logical. If you go to the kitchen and you're asked to make a meal, and the dialogue that's going on is, one day, maybe in 5 or 6 or 10 years, I'll be able to make a meal for people, but I'll just get through it and kind of do the thing that I'm supposed to do. The attitude is very self-defeating. It doesn't really, you don't grow very quickly. But if you put on a chef's hat, okay? So all of you, you go, you're not allowed to, but you go into the Dharma Center kitchen and you're given a chef's hat. You know those, you know, chef's hat? And you're given a really cool, like black or colored chef's clothing, right? It's got a pen, it's got your name on it, and you know the chefs, they've got the name of the chef on there, and you've got the hotel, it'd be the Dharma Center of Canada. This is coming, right? Dharma Center of Canada. And special shoes. And you walk in. I'm doing chef-like things. And I'm gonna, this is the kitchen. And I'm gonna actually pull this off. And that should be the attitude, which is called Buddha pride. There's a name for that. It's called Yidam pride or Buddha pride. When you go to practice a sadhana, you got to get in that attitude. I already am the Skull Garland Lord. I already am Yeshe Shogo. This is my nature. I am going to go through this process to extract and bring out that nature, which is just hidden in me. And I'm going to practice as an awakened being. That is the Vajrayana practice. What does offering from? What does offering? Who does the offering? What is the offering? What does offering from from Pema, from lotus to sound, praticha? Oh, in other words, what is that? Whoever asked that, what is that? Yeah. One's listing the outer offerings that you would give a guest when they come into an Indian home. So traditionally, when a guest would come into a home in India, you give them 8 offerings. You bestow on them 8 offerings as an honorable guest into your house. Water for washing the feet, water for drinking. You offer them flowers. You offer them lights, right, to go to their room. You offer them scented water to freshen up. You offer them a perfume. You offer them a beautiful, not crummy food, not ordinary food. You offer them wonderful food. You put on a banquet for them. And then, of course, you play music for them at the end of the banquet. So this is the honor, making honor to the most valuable guest that you bring into your house, into your being. That makes sense? And that's called the outer offerings. So that's what that is. And the praticha is something like, I wish this to happen, something like that. There was another something you said after something. That's a mysterious question. Let's see. There was another word you said after. Can a hug? H-R-I-G, hring, to the mantra. What was it?
I don't know.
Hring, hring, hring. Ho, ho, ho. Ha, ha, ha. Well, now we have the sound, we have the mantra of Saraswati. Hring, hring, hring. Hring, hring, hring. Hring, hring, hring. One last one. Should we should we recite in a bat language? No, I don't think so. I can't read tonight or something. This is great. This is fun. Should we, I think, recite in bat, B-U-T-T, language, in, see, nobody wants to tell me who wrote this. In Bhutanese, in Tibet, I don't know, in something, in bat, in Buddhist language, and I'll eventually get out who wrote this.
Both?
Should we recite in both languages?
Oh, in both languages. Oh, yes, yes. That's more like what it is. In their butt. Yeah. So. No, the answer is no. Do you mean the whole text? Whoever wrote this, do you mean the full text when we're reciting, for instance, the visualization? It's as you wish. I don't ever insist, unless it's a kind of a group practice, then we usually do Tibetan and English, but not always. It depends on the group. This group is quite used to doing both English and Tibetan. Others are not. Probably if I had a whole bunch of new people and they're not used to it, I'd probably just do it in English. But for mantras, the mantras are recited in Sanskrit or Sanskritized Tibetan. And there's an important reason for that, which I may not go into tonight because I want to make this a short class tonight. There's a lot to that. We really actually do want to say mantras not in our language. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the text can be said in English for sure, or in Portuguese or Italian or German, if the translation's good, and that's fine. It just doesn't have to be in Tibet.
Okay. In another class, can you share why it's so important for us to do it in another language?
I would be very happy to do that. Another, just remind me, but that would be a bit of a long class, and I really want to make this to the point. But sure, that'd be great. I'd be happy to do that. That is an important question. Why would we do it in Tibetan or Tibetanized Sanskrit? In the great perfection, what is a Buddha field? We are asked to visualize one in the mandala offering. Well, actually, whenever we're generating a mandala, which is Vajrasattva, the space of Vajrasattva, the space of Vajrayana, the space of Tara, the space of Chenrezi, we're actually imagining a Buddha field, a pure realm, where beings awaken very quickly because the Dharma is taught everywhere and the Dharma is just flowing. And highly awakened beings are not only teaching, but they're also practicing. So the other meaning of that is practicing that way is that we're already, it's to come that we're already in a Buddha field. So normally we don't feel this is a Buddha field because it's seen with relative experience. But in fact, it's nothing other than a Buddha field. The Dharma is being taught and is pervasively Buddha activity. So in that sense, we always, if we can, we strive to imagine we are in a Buddha field. We're not just the Dharma Center of Canada, we're actually in a Buddha field. Therefore, we purify our perception. Could you imagine, can any of you imagine just for a second that example. Anybody ever traveled to a country and it wasn't as you imagined? Let's see a show of hands. Anybody traveled to a country and it just wasn't how you imagined? Okay. Could you imagine that the way, not only the way we see and we experience the world, is one very narrow way of seeing. Can you all believe that? Yeah. We know that actually physically is the case. Can you imagine though that like the book Flatland, anybody read the book Flatland? Fantastic book. Written, try and remember, 1902, 1880, something like that. It's a beautiful little book describing a world of one worlds of 1, 2, 3, 4, and a little bit into the fifth dimension. It's a beautiful little book. And it's an attempt to describe what it would be like to be a one-dimensional being, but two-dimensional beings can't see you. And a one-dimensional being can't see a two-dimensional being, and a three-dimensional being can't even imagine what a two-dimensional being is. And have you ever tried to imagine what a four-dimensional being is like, or a five-dimensional being? It's very difficult. It really is hard to do. So we know that we can have multiple dimensions, but it's you have to spend a lot of time to get your cognition changed into experiencing other dimensions. So right in this room, it's quite logically possible, actually in modern physics, it's quite mainstream that the physics is saying that we probably have 10 to the 50 different simultaneous universes going on. The likelihood is that's correct. That's extraordinary, isn't it? So in this room, there's all kinds of beings that we can't even contact because our cognitive, our conceptual mode is we won't even see them even if we look at them. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're walking down the Dharma Center path towards the temple at night. Or you're just out there. You're walking in the forest. And you see a beautiful sphere of radiant light over here. Just a beautiful glow. What would most people do when they look at the glow of light? They just turn to it and they would say what? Firefly. Right? But you may find actually that little dot of light is in fact a dakini or a dak or a full mandala, a Buddha activity, but because the concept is what? It must be a form of life that we know, therefore, that's what you see. So an awakened being could actually be right in front of you, giving you transmission, and there's no recognition whatsoever. It doesn't compute. It won't even compute. So that's a wonderful statement that's been in the teaching for a long time. Even if you tripped over an awakened being, you likely wouldn't recognize it.
But you might feel it.
You might. You might not. I've known people who've gone to like a class in Namjoon Rinpoche. I said to them afterwards, how was that? It's kind of just, it's common sense. I knew that, you know. I'm going, holy goodness, he just, the most extraordinary discourse on totality. It's kind of ordinary stuff, I guess. You see? So the conceptual framework allows you to see and experience in your conceptual framework. And it's very hard to feel that there could actually be a completely enlightened dimension of activity right here, right now. And that's exactly the way it is in the text. So we're not actually creating a Buddha realm. We're looking for the Buddha realm. We're actually discovering the Buddha realm inside, outside, as Buddha activity. Okay? A realm of Buddha activity. So this is where I have a difference with some people who go, oh, the universe is a place of wonder. It is, actually, but it's a lot of sentient beings suffering and confused. But it's also not just wonder, it's universes of enlightened activity, not just interesting things. So why do we imagine these things? Why would we imagine a Buddha field? Why would we imagine ourselves as a Yidam? Why don't we just do this? Wait for it to happen. Why don't we just, you know, say Om Mani Padme Hum or something like that, or just be clear and calm and wait until the Buddha mandala emerges? Because we could be waiting a very long time. So it's better to put the seeds of enlightened activity. If I say right now to folks, if I say, we're in a Buddha realm right now, is there a Buddha realm right now? No. Genuine experiences happen when there's genuine experiences. A fantasizer can actually make up any meditative experience. If you're a teacher, you should know when the being is fantasizing. And by the way, there's people that are really excellent fantasizers. So they can have whatever experience you say, oh, you know, Guru Rinpoche landing on your head and giving transmissions, I know of people who, right the next day, they're sitting in meditation. Yeah, Guru Rinpoche was on the head giving transmissions. But you can hear by the voice, Guru Rinpoche was giving me transmissions. No, that's not actually what it's like. Yeah, I saw Guru Rinpoche. Pretty ordinary, eh? Yeah. No. So the voice, the intimation, the aura, the space in the room, the feel, isn't correct, do you see? So fantasy or imagination can go a long way. So if you say, visualize a vajra, oh, you're getting in my way because now you're giving me a very deep meditative symbol that I would like to have happen for me. No, there's no way you're going to have the vajra rising in your heart as a genuine experience until it happens. You can imagine it. But until it actually clearly arises and your mind snaps too, then it's fine. So you may as well introduce things. You know, it's like saying, don't ever give anybody the 16 stages of insight. They'll ruin it, right? Because they'll imagine they're there. No, you can tell. You can tell pretty quickly that they're fabricating the eighth stage or the fifth stage. You can tell. Yeah, I was frightened last night. Nice. Go back and work. Because it doesn't sound very frightened. Yes?
So I hear you describe an awakening experience as, for example, having a deity, coming face-to-face with a deity, or having a vajra arise in your heart, or any, all of these kinds of experiences are like metaphors, or could literally happen. I was just wondering, there's other systems, like religious practices, that have different deities and have different beliefs in different culture and still have legitimate awakenings. So I guess the content of your experience is changed based on the system you're using to awaken yourself?
Yes and no.
So like a Christian monk would probably have a different experience of awakening?
Not necessarily. I've known people who've had no training or basis of Tibetan Buddhism and have actually experienced Tara appearing before them. Nothing at all. Absolutely shocked when they had the empowerment. Went, oh my God, I saw that all the time as a child. So, but things mostly get translated through the cultural view. So if you're raised as a Christian, you'll change Christ or the father figure of enlightened activity or the mother figure into what you got raised into. I mean, most of you could probably visualize Christ better, more easily in the heart than Guru Rinpoche. Is that correct? Or Mary? Yeah. And actually, I've known people who are Tibetan or Buddhists, Western Buddhists, who've had the most profound experiences of Christian mystical symbols arising in them while they're practicing sadhana. Perfectly legitimate. Nothing wrong with that. If it's genuine experience, it's genuine experience. If you're practicing Vajrasattva and it changes into a beautiful Christ-like form or Yeshe Shogal then becomes the Virgin Mary, White Virgin Mary, and it's a powerful, moving, really awakening experience, congratulations, no problem at all. Not at all. Yeah. So these are seen through the cultural. What Guru Rinpoche is going to look like to you, Adam, may not be the same way in which Guru Rinpoche appears to Daryl or Laurel. But it still can be Guru Rinpoche. Yeah. And as Guru Rinpoche says in a terma of Fierce Guru with Perma, in a treasure text, it doesn't matter how many arms and legs or faces I have, it's still Guru Rinpoche. So you need to know, a crow can come to you and give you transmission. You need to know whether it's Guru Rinpoche or not, or enlightened activity. So Guru Rinpoche stands in for all enlightened activity. Guru Rinpoche stands in for all of Guru activity. Guru Rinpoche is Vajragini. Guru Rinpoche is Vajrasattva. I'm not making this up. This is exactly how it's explained. Guru Rinpoche is all the deities in the mandala. And all the deities in the mandala are Guru Rinpoche. They just take on different forms to suit different beings at different needs. Somebody in this room may take on Chenrezig, and that's the best thing they could do for 1 billion mantras. Somebody else, it may be Vajragini, and it may be Tara. You see? So out of skill and means, many, many yidams are given. Because we have different affinities at different times. If you have a very good heart connection with your root guru, your principal teacher, then we say, whatever the teacher's doing, you do. Why? Because you want the flexibility to be able to whatever yidam that they are entering and whatever mandal they're generating, you also want to have the flexibility to do the same. Why? Because we're trying to realize their mind's nature, which is utter flexibility of compassion to all sentient beings. There are teachers sometimes that will give 7-8 wankurs in a day. There are transmissions where there's 400 wankurs. The teacher's giving 4, 5, 6 wankers every single day for 2 or 3 months. Why? For the benefit of all sentient beings, not just one single sentient being. And most of the people in the room will never use the majority of them. But they may use 3 or 4. Or they may someday, like Antrim Brashe, when I went to see Antrim Brashe once, and I said, could you give the empowerment such as? Yes, bring me the text of the Rinzai Tsurdzo. It has 750 empowerments. I've received them all. I'd be very happy to give that to you. He's never practiced it, but he's received it, so he's happy to pass it on. Does that make sense? Out of compassion for the being requesting it, he's going to say, bring me the text. I'm happy to give you the unbroken transmission. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's his major practice. Out of compassion. So you may never need to practice it, but somebody else, that's their life's work. That's their major practice of their life, out of compassion. 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 Well, I think that's a good place to finish. Bodhicitta is vast. So I want to instill that. The scope of bodhicitta is absolutely vast. The activities of awakened beings is vast. But it has one essence. It comes out of one essence, but it's absolutely magnificently vast. So just as the universe is just absolutely wondrous in myriad forms, myriad life forms, colors and everything else, is that right? It's extraordinary. Look at all the books written. So too Buddha nature can manifest in myriad forms of awakened activity. Let us finish tonight. This being has done a lot of mouth operations. Oh, here's another one buried here. Tomorrow. We'll leave that for tomorrow. Let us do a short form dedication aspiration. Idante when you come on, I saw a go no do it and day when you come on, I saw a go no do it and day when you come on, I saw a go no do. By this powerful activity, this Buddha, this Hunyakama, may it lead to the cessation of the floods, the asavas, for all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have excellent health, excellent happiness, and may all beings discover the unborn, the unbroken, the continuity of primordial freedom, the unity of wisdom and compassion as the most glorious gift for all sentient beings. Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam.